So the cost of being a disciple from Luke 14. If you do have a Bible, then please keep your fingers in the page so we can look at the verses as we go through them. I'm trying to unpack a bit what Jesus was saying to the people that he was traveling with at this time. So who was Jesus speaking to, first of all? Verse 26. Large crowds were traveling with Jesus. And turning to them, he said. So he turned to them, maybe he was talking to his little inner circle of disciples, and he turned to the large crowd, doesn't say. But there were large crowds. This is the context of what Jesus was speaking into, the fact that there were large crowds, and he was trying to make a point to them, as well as to his own disciples. You know, what is Jesus saying here? Most of us think you've got a regular Christian, someone who does their best and goes to church most Sundays, tries to be morally good as best they can. And then you've got Christians like Mother Teresa and the like who think, these super Christians, these people who seem so much better than us normal everyday Christians. So much more committed, so much more loving, so much more giving. And Jesus turns around and he speaks to anyone. Anyone who wants to be my disciple, this is what it's going to take. And he's effectively saying there are no two standards. There is only one standard of following me, and that is either you are my disciple or you're not. There is no low-grade disciple, mid-grade disciple, and high-grade disciple. There is just being a disciple. So they'd seen his miracles. They'd followed him, obviously excited by his miracles and by his teaching. And then he almost seems to be putting them off. A few times Jesus does this, as recorded in the Gospels. Turns around to crowds and talks to them and almost seems to dissuade them from following him. Full discipleship is the only thing you can do if you want to follow me, was his basic core message. See, many people's Christianity, there's no self-denial in it. In many people's Christianity, there is no living out kingdom principles. In many people's Christianity, there is no forsaking of the world or the things of this world or ungodly ways. They are just the same as the world. Their faith costs them nothing. And in the end, it will fail them. The road to salvation is not cheap. It's not easy. Jesus is making sure that the people who were following him were understanding this message. It costs. It costs everything. It's a difficult road to take. That's another well-known thing that Jesus said from Matthew 7. Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the road is easy that leads to destruction. And there are many who take it. For the gate is narrow and the road is hard that leads to life, and there are few who find it. I was reading an account in John this morning where Jesus again was challenging people. They're asking him, what will it take? And he told them truthfully. And it said they all left. They all left because the message was hard. There was a cost involved. So what is the cost of true discipleship? See, our lives are basically summed up in three dimensions. We have the people in our lives. We have ourselves. And we have our stuff. So the people in our life, ourselves, and our stuff. That is what forms our lives. Who we relate to, our own personal desires and goals and ambitions, and the possessions that we have. And Jesus wants to speak into every area in our lives. In all those areas he wants to speak to as he's speaking to the people here. So let's look at verse 26. It says, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, his wife and his children, his brothers and his sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciples. Wow. Did he really just say that? If anyone does not hate his father and mother, what? Shocking, isn't it? His father and mother, his wife and children, his brothers and sisters, his own life. So, but Jesus says elsewhere, surely he says that we should love one another as I have loved you. Surely he says that God is love. So this can't mean hate them, and it doesn't. It's a way of speaking. It's a way of him trying to express something. So what is he trying to express? Jesus saying, if you want to be my follower, then you must have supreme love for me. Supreme love for Jesus. Love me more than anything or anybody in the whole universe. He is saying that when you compare your love for me and your love for every other relationship that you may have, it should appear as though you love me, your love for me so outshines your love for anything or anybody else that it seems like you hate them in comparison to me. So he's not saying don't love our family, our husbands, our children, our friends. He's saying love me first. Love me more. That's what it will take to get you through. A supreme love for me. He's not just saying he wants to be more important and a priority in our lives. He's saying he wants our love. We need to get the right ordering of loves. God, love God more. See, in the end, you can do without all the other loves as long as you have me, is what Jesus is saying. And many people had to give up their families. Many people had to give up their lives. Many people had to give up so much. He says, you can do all this if you love me first. You can do without all the other loves. See, we can only truly love others through Jesus anyway. We can only sacrificially love others through what Jesus teaches us. You have to hate your own life. Does that mean we have to have some kind of morbid, suicidal attitude to our own lives? Masochistic, self-destructive? No. What it means is that you consider yourself and your will and your ambition and your desire and your purposes as unimportant compared to your desire to do what honors Jesus. Jesus and his kingdom, God's kingdom first, always and ever. See, Jesus is saying, don't try to fit me into the agenda of your life. Have you got your life outlined ahead of you? Can you now see what you think your life should look like? Well, don't make me fit into that life, please. Don't make me the means and your life the end. Your life is the means and I am the end. See, you're not my disciple unless you come to me and say, I'm with you whatever, Jesus. Jesus saying that if you would be his and have his salvation, you must love him beyond every other person in this world, including your own life. And then he goes on to verse 27, anyone who does not carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. What does it mean to bear the cross? People often talk about bearing the crosses in this life, don't they? As the kind of the troubles that they have to bear. But I believe that's missing the greater truth of what Jesus is saying here. See, bearing the cross in those times, when you bared the cross and you walked to, as Jesus did, to Calvary, to Golgotha, it means you were going to die. Bearing the cross meant you were going to die. It represents death to self. It represents self-denial, supreme self-sacrifice. The cross tells us discipleship is unconditional. You don't pick up your cross and start walking to Golgotha and say, oh, this isn't working for me. It's hard. Jesus is not saying, I'm guaranteeing you a happy life if you follow me. See, your discipleship is unconditional. There's no ifs, no buts. If there are any ifs, then it's not discipleship. I will obey you, Jesus, whatever it means, whatever it costs. Are you making relationships and moral decisions on how it feels? And what our culture tells us, what is good and not? Or are you making them on what Jesus requires of you? See, there's no middle ground. You either follow Jesus or you don't. You submit to his will and his ways, die to self and follow him, or you don't. In the Bible, it's also a present tense. It's an ongoing taking up the cross every day. Every day dying to self, every day following Jesus, every day submitting to God's desires. Not our own desires and our own goals. So Jesus then tells two very short parables to illustrate the point of how we can meet that cost. Verse 28, suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Will he not first sit down? This is why I use the chair. Will he not first sit down? Hey, what do you want to sit down for? Sit down and consider. Take a moment. Jesus is speaking. Take a moment. What are you really saying to me, Lord? You want me to follow you? What does that really mean? You see, impulsive commitment will almost certainly lack endurance. And what he's saying is foolish to begin without realizing what you need to finish the job. The cost involved. How many projects do we know that have been started and not finished? HS2 comes to mind as quite a good one. And you could probably name a few others of people who started doing something that have a massive cost and haven't been able to finish. And then the second parable, the king seeing if he has enough resources to win the war. And again, he's asked to consider the cost first of the battle. And realizing he doesn't have enough resources, so he needs to make peace with the invading king. I don't believe building and war illustrations are used by accident here by Jesus. So his disciples, as his followers, the Bible often talks about building and using building images. And also talks about a battle that we will be in. So building and battle, these are the two illustrations that Jesus used. To be a disciple is a building up of a character which will endure the day of judgment. Discipleship begins in laying deep foundations in faith and love and a renewed heart. By loving and believing in Jesus. So that's what we do, isn't it? When we come to believe in Jesus, we put a faith in him, we believe in him, we lay those foundations. Jesus calls it the rock. Yeah, when you build on the rock, it's those foundations of faith that you lay, which is Jesus. But after we've laid those foundations, that's only the beginning of the story. So it is carried on by building on that foundation patiently and carefully and often painfully, stone upon stone, the materials that will shape our lives. Peter, in his book, says this, that we should add to our faith. He begins with faith, but he says we should add these things to our faith. This is like building on that foundation. He says we should build on that faith a generous provision of moral excellence. Moral excellence. And then to the moral excellence, knowledge. So we build knowledge. And then on that knowledge, we build self-control. And then on that self-control, we build patient endurance. And on that patient endurance, we build godliness. And on that godliness, we build brotherly affection. And on that brotherly affection, love for everyone. Jude tells us that our life work consists in building yourselves up in your most holy faith. Discipleship is a lifelong experience. It is something we commit to, knowing this is a lifelong thing, and it's going to mean me counting the cost of what's it going to take to build this life. Do I want to see this building for Jesus? Also about battle. He compares discipleship to a battle. Paul tells us as believers, we have the next slide please, that our battle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Wow. See, in the parable, the disciple of Jesus has to defend himself against a gigantic foe. And he has with himself a power which, as far as he's concerned, is not sufficient for the contest. The odds are fearful, 10,000 against 20,000. There is no way he's going to win this war, this battle, against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. We need to realize, as followers of Jesus, the building or the battle will never actually be finished until we are with Jesus. We will still be building and we will still be fighting until we get to be with Jesus. And Jesus knows that. And that's why he's telling us. We need to consider what it will cost to carry on building and to carry on fighting. Now, it's very odd that after illustrating the cost of discipleship with the builder that might not have enough money to finish the tower, and a king that might not have enough soldiers to win a battle, that Jesus draws this conclusion. You cannot be my disciple unless you give up everything you have. Hold on a second. It's odd because the illustration asks, do you have enough? That's what he's asking, do you have enough? And the conclusion says, well, get rid of what you have. Eh? You see, that's the answer. In other words, no, you do not have enough. You do not have enough resources. You just can't do it. You will never have enough. That's the answer. The parables and illustrations teach us that our own resources are inadequate to finish the job and must be abandoned. What does Jesus mean when he asks us to consider the cost? The emphasis of the parables is the point of surrender and self-sacrifice. The original language in verse 33 says, give up, apotasso, say goodbye to. You say goodbye to self-reliance. You say goodbye to reliance upon people who will let you down and demand your time before God. You've become a steward of everything and an owner of nothing. What you're saying is, I don't have any relationships that aren't given to you, Jesus. What you're saying is, I don't have any self-interests that aren't given to you, Jesus. What you're saying is, I don't have any possessions, Lord, that aren't given to you. You let go of all your resources. See, an important word occurs throughout this passage in verses 26, 27, and 33, and it is the word cannot. We see this three times. Jesus says to these multitudes that those who do not come after him with this level of commitment, of giving up everything, cannot be his disciples. Now, he's not saying you're not allowed to be. That's not what cannot means here. The word cannot is a compound word in the Greek. It is the words ouk, dunamai. The word ouk means not, and the word dunamai means power or ability. So, in other words, Jesus is saying that those who try to come after him with less than total self-denial do not have the power or ability to become his followers or disciples. So he seems to be saying that we do not have the power or ability to be his disciples unless we come to him in total surrender and commitment. I came across this saying by a lady called Catherine Kuhlman, and I thought it summed it up well. I surrendered unto him all there was of me, everything. Then, for the first time, I realized what it meant to have real power. See, when we give everything to the Lord, and you submit to him, and you humble yourself, and you bow the knee, it's only then do we have real power to be able to build and to fight and to become and live as a disciple. Verse 34 and 35 talks about salt. It says salt is good. But if it loses saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is neither fit nor the soil nor for the manure heap. It is thrown out. He who has ears, let him hear. See, to be a total dedicated follower of Jesus, to be a disciple, is good. You are salty. You stop the rot in this world. You are the love of Jesus and the people around you in your workplaces. It is good. But if the salt becomes unsalty, if it doesn't count the cost, if it doesn't pick up its cross every day, then it becomes useless. Jesus used the same speaking to churches in Revelation, where he said to one of the churches there that you're lukewarm. You're neither hot nor cold, you're just lukewarm. And what am I going to do? I'm going to spit you out. You see, we are no good to Jesus unless we're committed, dedicated followers of him. And this is what he's saying to the crowd. Do you realize this, what it's going to take? I wonder how many people walked away. See, these parables challenge me to the core that Jesus is to be more important than anything or anyone else in my life. And I need to ask him every day to him to empower me by his Spirit to be able to live that way. See, what will be the cost of following Jesus for you? I don't know. It could mean you might have to give your life for Jesus, as so many thousands upon thousands of followers of Jesus do every year. But I do know it will be your life of self that you will have to give up. Your ambitions and hopes and desires that aren't in line with what Jesus wants for your life. Because that's what Jesus says. Count the cost. The cost is high. It is high. But you know, the cost of not following Jesus is even higher. Yes, Jesus asks us to leave everything else behind, to make him our first priority. What price do we pay if we decide not to follow Jesus? What is the cost of refusing to be a true disciple? In his book, Dallas Willard lists the things we lose if we don't follow Jesus with our whole being. He writes, "Non-discipleship costs abiding peace. It costs a life penetrated throughout by love and joy. It costs faith that sees everything in the light of God's overriding governance for good. It costs hopefulness that stands firm in the most discouraging of circumstances. It costs power to do what is right and withstand the forces of evil. In short, it costs exactly that abundance of life that Jesus said he came to bring." See, many other parables teach us just the same thing. Think about the parable of the pearl that cost everything, and the guy sold everything he had to own the pearl, which is the kingdom of heaven. It costs everything. Does this seem overwhelming? Verse 35 says, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." He wants us to sit down, and he wants us to consider, and he wants us to hear. Because nothing else is good enough. Total surrender to Jesus. It might seem overwhelming, but like that lady said earlier on in that quote, it's not until she actually did it and actually gave up everything, then she knew the real power of Jesus in her life. See, salvation is absolutely free. Absolutely free. It's grace. You can't do anything to earn it. But once you receive it, it costs you everything. Understanding the power of discipleship is not the strength of what we say no to, but the power of whom we say yes to. As we count the cost, we need to measure the treasure. I like that one. As we count the cost, we need to measure the treasure. Jesus is such a treasure. He is worth giving up everything for. And he will tell you what to do if you ask him. All of your relationships will come under him. Put him first before everything else. Count the cost. Understand that the power of discipleship is not the strength of what we say no to, but the power of whom we say yes to. Jesus is looking for us to say yes to him and his ways this morning, so that he can empower us by his Spirit to be his followers and his disciples, living in that abundant life he promises to give to his disciples.